This is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Niemann-Pick disease type C. Unless you know someone who's had it, you've probably never heard of it. It's a rare genetic disease that disrupts the movement of cholesterol and other fats around within cells. The end result varies widely from death in the first few months of life to mild chronic problems that may go undiagnosed well into adulthood. Niemann-Pick is just one of many rare diseases. Each may affect only a small percentage of the population, but that does not make such conditions any less devastating for those who have them. And it presents unique challenges for the researchers trying to find treatments and cures for these diseases. Challenges like limited funding and a limited number of people to take part in trials. But rare disease research can yield discoveries that impact all of us. Stephen Sturley is a professor in the Department of Pediatrics at Columbia University and at Barnard College. He's a member of the Scientific Advisory Board for the National Niemann-Pick Disease Foundation. Stephen, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Introduce us to Niemann-Pick disease, and the fact that there's a type C suggests that there's also a type A and a type B.
That's right. Niemann-Pick type C disease is a disease that falls into a classification known as lysosomal storage disorders. Both Niemann-Pick A and Niemann-Pick B are due to deficiencies in an enzyme that breaks down lipids. Niemann-Pick type C, however, is a disease that arises from a mutation in a gene that transports lipids into the lysosome.
And the lysosome is a part of the cell?
The lysosome is the garbage bag of the cell. That's where recycling of lipids takes place, and that's where lipids get broken down. And so in a lysosomal storage disorder, these lipids accumulate in the lysosome and either block the lysosome from functioning or deprive the cell of the lipids, which are needed for membrane formation.
And you said the other two types, the A and the B, are deficiencies. So the end result of all of these types of Niemann-Pick is not enough cholesterol or not enough of certain fats?
Either not enough cholesterol in certain fats or the cholesterol accumulates, which then causes the lysosome to generally misfunction.
And what are the symptoms of the disease?
So all three diseases are neurodegenerative in that although every organ in the body is affected by loss of these genes, the main organs that get affected are the brain.
So we're used to thinking of a cholesterol-related disease as being like a heart disease,
but this is actually a neurodegenerative brain
condition.
It's certainly the fatalities that arise are due to neurodegeneration.
Hmm. So how many people have a Niemann-Pick disease of one type or another?
So Niemann-Pick type C affects about 1 in 90,000 people, which means that in the current census, there are about 400 families in the U.S. that are affected by this disease.
And it's a genetic disease, but it's really variable in the outcomes. I mean, how unusual is that for a genetic disease?
Well, recessive disorders tend to be somewhat variable because a lot of families have different mutations. The disease can vary from a very early age of onset when the protein is completely misfunctional to a disease that manifests in late 60s at its most extreme.
That's got to make it really hard to diagnose.
It's very hard to diagnose. The time to diagnosis is at least 5 years. And since most of the most common variants of the disease show up around about 5 or 6, most of these children don't really get a diagnosis until their mid-teens. And unfortunately, at that point in time, most neurons have been damaged by the loss of this protein. And it's very hard to treat at that stage because the damage has already been done.
Right. You can't go back and regrow those neurons.
You can't regenerate neurons in general. Some areas of the brain do regenerate neurons, but in the cerebellum, that doesn't happen. And so this is mainly a cerebellar disease.
That's a specific case where it's difficult to make the diagnosis for a number of reasons, but that's not unusual for rare diseases as a whole. When you have something that doctors don't see every day, it often takes a while for the medical system as a whole to figure out what's going on with a patient with a rare disease.
That's correct. That's correct, yeah. And, these diseases are very hard to treat because the treatment that's available are only currently coming into clinical trials. Nevertheless, being a neurodegeneration, picking the disease up late causes a problem with any sort of treatment that's going to be used.
In the case of Niemann-Pick type C, you know the gene responsible. Is this something that could just be universal genetic testing?
It really should be, yes. And there are several reasons why it should be. The first reason is that the time to diagnosis is 5 years, and the time to manifestation of symptoms is often not until age 6 or 7, sort of starting school. And so by the time these children get to the age of 11 or 12, most of the damage has been done. And so to have a screening being done of all populations for this disease would be the most sensible strategy to use. And in these days of genome sequencing, it's not a hard task to screen for these diseases.
Stephen Sturley, as a researcher, how did you originally get interested in this one particular rare disease, Niemann-Pick type C?
So my research interest has always been how cholesterol is moved around the body. And I started, as you were saying in your introduction, about looking at mainly atherosclerosis and heart disease. And then I stumbled across this disease, both in a sort of quest for funding for my research in general, but also out of curiosity, in that this transporter, this protein that is defective in Niemann-Pick type C, seemed like it was an unusual pathway that had not been investigated.
You mentioned funding for your research. That's often a challenge with these rare diseases. So how do you fund your research on this?
So the majority of my funding has come from a foundation called the Ira Parseghian Medical Research Foundation. It was unfortunate that this family had three affected children. Ira Parseghian was a football coach for Notre Dame, and he and his family set up their own research foundation where their goal was to raise money and funnel that money directly into research. And as a consequence, they made research funding available to a lot of researchers, and I was one of the first people to be funded. And this was back in the days before the gene was cloned. This predates the time of genome sequencing, so the gene was cloned in a somewhat old-fashioned molecular biology approach. Like many of these situations, a lot of people hoped and maybe assumed that cloning the gene would lead to a cure. And unfortunately, the nature of this protein does not actually produce that result, unfortunately.
The kind of research you're describing is labor-intensive, and even now, when we do have all of these advances in genetic sciences, it's still expensive and time-consuming research.
Correct.
And when you're trying to fund that through family foundations, you know, compare the scale of funding to something like cancer research or Alzheimer's research or some of these other kind of higher profile biomedical research programs that we see heavily funded at the national level.
Right. So I do receive funding from the NIH, and so do many of my colleagues. And so the NIH is not ungenerous in its support of rare diseases. And part of the reason for that is they recognize that investigating rare diseases has a lot of consequences for more prevalent diseases that are in the population. The interesting thing about Niemann-Pick type C is that it also happens to be the cellular receptor for the Ebola virus.
Ebola virus.
That's right. Yes.
What's the connection between Ebola and cholesterol?
It's unclear exactly at the moment, but it's well known now that the Ebola virus, as part of its life cycle, has to get into the lysosome. And it turns out that the Niemann-Pick type C protein, which is found on the surface of this garbage bag of the cell, is the actual cellular receptor for the Ebola virus.
So it's the thing that would kind of grab the virus and put it into there.
So once the virus has got inside the cell, the next stage of its life cycle is to get into the lysosome and move on to the next part of its life cycle. And if you don't have the Niemann-Pick C protein, then one prediction would be that you'd be resistant to the Ebola virus.
I would assume that research on something like Niemann-Pick type C, and more broadly, as you were saying, with your research on cholesterol, when you're funding research on a rare disease that affects the movement of cholesterol, that could also have ramifications for a whole host of other cholesterol-related health impacts.
Absolutely. There are very strong suggestions that Alzheimer's disease is affected by at least the cholesterol status of the brain. And the way in which that cholesterol is controlled in the brain is certainly in part a component of the Niemann-Pick type C protein. And so that type C protein might be involved in, for example, Alzheimer's or Huntington's disease.
Well, Stephen Sturley, you were mentioning that it's been, something like 20 years since you did uncover what gene is responsible for Niemann-Pick disease type C, but that there's still, that hasn't led immediately to a treatment or a cure. And I think that's something we've also seen far more broadly. There was this idea, especially with the Human Genome Project, like we're going to figure out all of our DNA, and within 10 years, we will have revolutionized all of medicine. And more than 10 years later, a lot of people are sitting around going, what happened to the promise of genome biology of, you know, if we understand our genes, we'll solve all of our diseases? Obviously, it's not that simple.
It's not that simple. And a lot of it comes down to how hard a nut is it to crack in terms of looking at the particular protein that's defective in disease. And the current treatment that actually is in FDA trials is actually a component called beta-cyclodextrin. This is the active component of Febreze.
Okay, wait. Febreze, like the anti-odor spray.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the anti-odor spray that you spray when your dog has got on your settee is the active component is called beta cyclodextrin. That beta cyclodextrin is actually a cage-like molecule that traps the odorant. Therefore, you can't smell it anymore.
How did the idea come about to use Febreze to treat a disease?
So it was pure scientific serendipity. In other words, it was the compound that was used to actually solubilize another drug that was being tested for treatment of Niemann-Pick type 2 disease. And after a series of experiments, it was discovered that the Febreze compound was actually the active compound rather than the drug candidate that was being looked at.
So it was just coincidence that it was being used to dissolve a totally different
exactly.
drug, but
exactly.
it was actually what was...
It was actually the active compound.
So the protein that causes Niemann-Pick type C is also the Ebola receptor.
Yes.
The treatment currently being tested for this disease is actually an ingredient in Febreze. I mean, these are wild and unexpected connections.
That's right. A lot of tangents.
To so many different things. Is that unique to Niemann-Pick type C disease? Or do you think this is something that if we looked at a lot of rare diseases, we just don't necessarily know what those connections are for all these different rare diseases, but they're there.
It's hard to say whether it's specific for Niemann-Pick type C. I think one thing that it is reflecting is the way in which research funding has been produced by this foundation, by the Ara Pasignan Medical Research Foundation. They were very open-minded about funding anybody who had an idea to study this disease, which means that a lot of people come from it from different directions. And like most things in scientific research, a lot of this has been fortuitous.
Obviously, there are challenges in rare disease research that can't be solved with money, right? That's not going to increase your population size
Correct.
For clinical
Yep.
trials. But a lot of this seems to come back to money. And I wonder what your thoughts are on what we should be doing perhaps differently, or if there is anything that we could or should be doing differently in terms of funding rare disease research to try to get to treatments and cures for these diseases, but also in recognition of, as we've talked about, the fact that studying rare diseases and just interesting basic biological processes can lead to all sorts of discoveries that we couldn't possibly have predicted.
I think that the future is not quite so pessimistic as it might be. In other words, there's a definite awareness that studying rare diseases has benefit for the larger populations. There's a definite awareness among drug companies that this is not a dead end in terms of just curing a disease for a limited number of people. And with a molecule like cholesterol, where everybody's aware that cholesterol has deleterious consequences if it's mishandled, means that there's an awareness that you should move forward. And so once a target has been found, I think companies are recognizing that it's not worth ignoring.
Stephen Sturley is a professor at Barnard College and Columbia University studying Niemann-Pick disease type C. He's also a member of the Scientific Advisory Board for the National Niemann-Pick Disease Foundation. Stephen, thank you.
Thank you.